chapter 2, and then later we'll read a couple more verses, but this begins the journey of the Bethlehem candle with a little bit of context as to where this idea comes from. In Luke chapter 2, verse 1, your Bible says this, "And it came to pass in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This census first took place while Quirinius was governing Syria. So all went to be registered, every one to his own city. Joseph also went up from Galilee, out from the city of Nazareth into Judea, into the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed wife, who was with child. So it was that while they were there, the days were completed for her to be delivered, and she brought forth her first son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in any inn." This tells us the story that many of us are familiar with, of Mary and Joseph's journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem. And I wanted to give you kind of a little bit of a context, because if you think of going from one city to the next in the 21st century mind, you miss out on quite a lot of the important details that impacted Mary and Joseph's journey. Their journey, just suffice it to say, was not a simple one, and it wasn't an easy one. It's really hard to tell exactly how far they journeyed, but the direct route from Nazareth to Bethlehem is about 90 miles. So if we were to get into a car and travel 90 miles, depending on how fast or slow you would drive, it would take, what, anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours, right, to get that distance? Does that seem, is that about, this man says it takes him about half of that time. I think we need to alert the police of his whereabouts at all times. I think for me, a reasonable person, it would take about 90 minutes to 2 hours. For them, however, it took them about 4 or 5 days, if they averaged 20 miles per day. Now, if they had an animal and a beast of burden, a donkey or something like that, 20 miles in a day for two of them, one of them being pregnant, it seems pretty aggressive to me to do 20 miles a day for 4 or 5 days. And I'm not really sure that would be the pace. I think it would be more like a week. I know that for me, if you were to make me to walk 90 miles, it would take me longer than 4 or 5 days. How many of you would be in my group of physical fitness or lack thereof that you could not go 90 miles in 5 days walking? The rest of you are crazy. We think you ought to try starting now. I don't think you can do it. The point being, one of the passengers is pregnant. When my wife was pregnant, she had to make more frequent stops when we traveled than when she wasn't pregnant. Not to mention the roads wouldn't be clearly paved like ours are. They'd be dirt, and if weather were involved, muddy, probably would be getting stuck, would be moving very slowly. In addition to that, there would be dangers that you would encounter of thieves and people who meant to do you harm, and perhaps wildlife that might slow down your journey. The point being that you read it in 7 verses, but it took 7 days to do it. And I want to draw your attention to that fact, because when we look at the candle of peace, the candle of Bethlehem, I think that most of us think the journey to peace should take less time than it actually does. That we want to experience that peace more rapidly than we often do. And so I think that's important as we look into this idea today, that I want to talk to you about 3 things. Pressure, preparation, and peace. Pressure, preparation, and peace. We all desire peace. We all experience pressure. The word in the middle is the key to experiencing peace in the midst of pressure. And that's the word preparation. Preparing ourselves, getting ready for what's next. Advent is about expectation and anticipation, not only for Jesus' first appearing, Advent, or first arrival, but second. And so many of you are getting ready like I am in your homes for Christmas, setting things up, getting decorations out, and so on and so forth. I'm in the gift buying phase right now, and I mainly do that through a little company you might have heard of called Amazon. Anybody heard of Amazon? Right. So that's how I'm doing it. And so daily and literally multiple times a day, we're getting deliveries up our lane. My wife's getting fed up. So in our relationship, I'm the spender and she's the saver. In other words, I'm the fun one, she's the boring one. That's what I mean. She knows it, don't worry about it, it's fine. And she's come up with this idea. She has an idea that she wants to begin to invoice Amazon and charge them for every trip that they take up our driveway as a form of a tax or toll, because she thinks it's damaging our pavement, and she might be right. If she gets in on like starting something that taxes and charges a toll for Amazon trips, does anyone want to be a part of that to start up with us? No, nobody? Okay, it's fine. But I thought that was an interesting idea, but we're getting ready. We're preparing, right? We're getting ready. And the more prepared we are in advance, the less stress and pressure that we're going to feel as the date gets closer. In any deadline in your business, in your workplace, in your family, when you're up against the deadline of a bill being due or something needing to be done, the more preparation you get, the more preparedness that you partake in, the less stress and pressure that gets attached to you as you get closer to the deadline. And inversely, the less preparation you do, the more stress and pressure is attached to you in that season of life. If that makes sense, say, makes sense to me. I want you to see that, because the same is true spiritually. The less preparation you do for whatever's coming next, the more pressure that will get the better of you. The more preparation you do, the less that pressure will have its way with you. There's no way of avoiding pressure. It comes in all kinds of forms. You cannot, listen, if you're praying for pressure to leave, I would encourage you to shift your praying and forget praying that way, because the stress and pressures of life come to us all. There's no avoidance of it. And life is oftentimes chaotic and fast. Anyone ever feel like they're in the middle of a whirlwind? Have you ever felt that emotionally? I felt that. Recently, this past week, I was being interviewed on a podcast, and the individuals were asking about pace of life. And I'm at a pace and place in life right now that I feel like life is the slowest it's ever been. Whereas life used to happen to me against my will, I feel like things are much, much slower. And that's happened since our granddaughter was born. She turned one on Friday, and I haven't had a bad day in 366 days. I have lots of cause for bad days. I've just chosen not to participate. And everything's happening slower. Watch this. Like, when we were in the throes of parenthood and we had four children in 35 and a half months, it was like herding cats. It was an attempt at controlling chaos. Everything was happening to us, and there was hardly any time to catch your breath. It's where I came up with the phrase, a half a nostril above water. It just was all over us. Now, I think one of the things that I'm enjoying about this stage that I'm in is I get to take in the moment and look at it and reflect on it and remember it, and not have to rely on a photo in a scrapbook to know that that thing existed. Now, for all of the parents who are raising infants and toddlers and teenagers, you're like, yeah, well, good for you, dude. That's not where I am. Like, help me. Okay, I'm going to help you. The pressure is going to always be there. But just like you get ready for all these things at this season, externally, today I want to encourage you about your internal preparation. What are you doing to prepare your heart? What the Bible calls your spirit man. The internal part of you, where the candle of the Lord is, as one writer says. That illuminates the inside. See, we try to control the external. And we think that if we can get everything in its proper place, if we can organize all of the mail that comes in, if we can have a place for all of the paperwork, and if we can prepare all of those material things, then things will feel less chaotic. Yet, we have some of the best levels of technology, the best kinds of organization at our fingertips, and yet we're more stressed and more pressured than ever before in human history. So it tells me something. What it tells me is, you organizing all of this and me organizing all of this doesn't solve this. The individual that was interviewing me said, well, can you just give me some peace about what I'm going through? And I respect the question, and I appreciate the question, but here's the truth. The answer to that question is no, I cannot. I cannot, and neither can any other human being. Isaiah gives us good news, though. In Isaiah chapter 9, the writer says this about this first arrival. For unto us a child is born, and unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. I cannot give you peace, but I know the one who can. His name is Jesus. And my point in saying that is, if we ever put pressure on people to be our peace of mind, we will end up disappointed every time, because Jesus is the only one that has the power to offer us true peace. Now, pressure isn't always bad. Pressure can be good. I don't think it's God, but I think it can be an internal trigger to point you to what you need to know. Let me give you a couple of examples. Years ago, when we were looking for a home to buy, I had some specific things that were non-negotiables on my list. If you've ever went through home hunting or apartment hunting, you had certain things, I'm guessing, that were non-negotiables. Maya had a weird one. Mine had to do with water pressure. I had to have water pressure. I grew up in a house where if you were in the shower and someone decided to wash their hands or flush the toilet or, God forbid, start the washing machine, you went from scalded to frozen to no water whatsoever. The pressure would fluctuate. So here's what I would do at every home we went to before we bought our first little home on Goose Pond. We would go to open houses, and I would beeline for the bathroom. I would turn on the shower, and then I would flush the toilet. And if that water temperature changed or pressure fluctuated, I went back to the car and let my wife do the tour on her own. God's honest truth. That's a God's honest truth. I'm like, I know what I want, and that's what I want. And if they cannot give me water pressure, this ain't my house. Come on, somebody. Like, I knew what I needed. I don't need a lot, as one of my friends says. I don't need a lot, but I need a lot of what I need. Can somebody give me an amen on that? And so I needed water pressure. So in this case, pressure was good. The other thing that I thought of that was pressure is good, if you've ever had a kink someplace in your back or neck or shoulder, you've gone somewhere for therapy, someone who knows what they're doing, they'll put some pressure on that spot. And it hurts a little bit, but then after they're finished, the pressure that they've applied relieves some pressure that you were experiencing. So in those two instances, pressures can be good. And I say that to you because the pressure of life must be met with a spiritual fortitude, a pressing into who God is. That is what will alleviate some of those pressures, and that happens through spiritual preparation. And in this season, when you're sitting and thinking about all that's happening, ask yourself, am I spiritually prepared for whatever's next? I don't know. because I don't know what's next. But you know the God who knows what's next, and you being prepared will help the pressure noise below and the voice of His Spirit be a little bit louder, so that when the pressure comes, you don't give in to the pressure, but you give in to what the Spirit of God is saying is your step in this journey. That's what Mary and Joseph were doing. They were preparing. They had to think through naturally, materially, all the things that were necessary for them to get from Nazareth to Bethlehem. And you may not be going from Nazareth to Bethlehem. You may be going from chaos to peace. And I promise you, preparation is needed in between. Let me give you an example of that, of one of my own shortcomings. How many of you would rather me tell my shortcomings than yours? Would that be good? Yeah. thanks, Jared. My man. I hate to keep bringing this up, but it just defined so many things for me and set it the course of so many things. And in the spring and summer of 2020, there was a lot of chaos with COVID, with politics, with race relations. And if you start living in that a little bit, you can re-feel the tension and pressure of all of that. I remember the Sunday that Governor DeWine gave the stay-at-home order, and internally I was like, what in the world? I was freaking out. This isn't meant to be political. Just follow me for just a moment, okay? The next day, I got a call from a dear family friend that had been friends with my parents for as long as I could remember, and her husband died. And he died with COVID. And I was asked to do the funeral. This is the day after the stay-at-home order. This is 3 years ago. I wonder if you can rewind to back when you had no information and everyone was guessing and afraid of what was happening next. Like, you just didn't know. And I turned to my wife when I got the call to do the funeral, and I said to her, oh my gosh, this could be serious. This could be very bad. Like, the fear grabbed a hold of me. The pressure was attached to me. And I lived for a period of time where I was because we weren't anywhere, we weren't going anywhere, so I was feeding on all of this noise and news that was making me feel responsible to know more and do more than I really could. How plain can I be to you today? Y'all stressed me the heck out during that time. Because, let me just be honest, for the previous 17 years, I could count on one hand the leadership decisions that I made that I wished I hadn't made and I thought were wrong. 5 in 18 years. That's not bad. 5 decisions that I thought were wrong. From March of 2020 until October of 2020, I don't think I made 5 decisions that were right. I was locked up in my own head, taking on all this pressure. Now, I'm not asking you, don't feel sorry for me. I know what I signed up for. But I'm telling you what got in the way of my peace in that time. Because peace is not the absence of turbulence or difficulty. It's knowing that you're in God's presence and God's with you in the middle of that difficulty. That's how peace comes. And I had my mind on all these things. What I had neglected was preparing my heart to stay connected to who God was. I was more connected to the cable news than I was to the God channel, to what God was saying. I neglected the prep work internally. Now watch, don't judge. It just isn't your turn yet to tell your story. But in that scenario, I chose it because I think it's low-hanging fruit for everyone to be able to see that in the midst of pressure, what you're paying attention to matters, and you will yield and move toward the thing that you're most focused on. And I don't know how long it's going to take you to get to Bethlehem, and I don't know what will be along the way for you between here and there, but here's what I know. There is the option for danger and stuckness and robbers and thieves that want to impede your progress. And if you become an expert in the roadside bandits and not an expert in preparing your heart to let God be the source, then everywhere you look, you'll see bandits. Because whatever you look at, whatever you celebrate, that's what you get. That's what you become. That's how you're shaped and molded. That's how the candle of peace gets extinguished, is by looking at the circumstances that are very real, yet a distraction from the preparation of your heart to stay focused on Him. How do you prepare? Pray. Someone says, I really don't know how to do that. Yeah, you do. Someone says, no, I don't. Yes, you do. How do I know you know? If you can talk, you can pray. If you can talk, you can pray. But so many things get in the way of that kind of preparation. Like, we don't feel worthy, and we have to do it perfectly, and it has to be in really textbook perfect Elizabethan English in order for God to hear it. It's funny that we believe that God hears us when we mess up in our NERC accent, but don't believe He can hear us unless we have the exact perfect right words that will open His ears and cause Him to pull our lottery ticket out of the jar. That's not the God we serve. The God we serve gave the only thing that He had one of, and you and I have full access to Him 24/7, even in the midst of when we've gotten it wrong, because this has never been about what you and I can do. It's always been about what He's already done on our behalf. That's what we focus on. So I'm going to close. I'm going to read a passage of Scripture to you, Luke chapter 8, verse 14. It's in this preparation that we find peace. And as I said, I want to repeat, peace is not the absence of turmoil, but it is the presence of God in the midst of those storms of life. Not just His peace, but it's peace that passes what the New Testament writer says is beyond all understanding. That it's so rich and so deep and so powerful that you can't get your mind around it. Consider this truth from Luke chapter 18. Jesus telling the story of what we call the parable of the sower. And in this parable, He gives the explanation of what a section of that parable meant in Luke 8:14. Here's what He says. The seed that fell among thorns stands for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they're choked out by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they do not mature. They fell among thorns of those who stand for those who heard, but they didn't do anything with what they heard. And when you don't do something with what you've heard, life and its pressures have an advantage on you. And they start to choke you out. They start to rob your soul of oxygen emotionally. Could be financial pressure, relational pressure, health concerns. I probably don't need to help you in your mind think of things that add pressure to you. You probably can get there pretty quick. Resisting those things happens when you make spiritual preparation a priority. You and your family. So that you're ready for whatever's next. that you don't know what it is, but he knows what it is. And even though you don't, your heart is ready for it. You know, we finished that kitchen earlier this year, and I can't tell you the number of people that we fed, but I'm sure we'll be able to tell you sooner rather than later. We finished that kitchen, and we hadn't even got the occupancy permit yet, and I already was talking about what was next for upstairs and Muskingum County and broadening our missions. I don't know if you guys find it interesting or if it makes you nervous, but when I bring you into the conversations that my wife and I has, do you guys enjoy that? Do you enjoy seeing our misery and our challenge? Does that help you at all? If that helps you at all, I'll keep doing it. She's like, Josh, you're kidding me, right? She didn't say this to you all. She's too nice for that. But to me, she's like, are you crazy? Like, what are you talking about? We don't have permission to use the kitchen yet, and you're already building something else. Yeah, now that you mention it, I guess that's true. I was staying prepared. And it's through that preparation that I want you to see this. I've never said this publicly. But it won't be that shocking to you. I won't be doing what I'm doing today for forever. Don't freak out. This is not a resignation service. I'm not going to announce that I'm moving, okay? It's just the reality of life that whatever you're doing now, you won't be doing it forever because you're not going to live forever, right? But here's what I feel like I'm wired to do, is to prepare for who and what's next. Because there will be a who and there will be a what's next after I breathe my last, and there will be for you too. And that preparation is about realizing you'll really never see the end of it, and that the goal is not retirement and just to disappear onto an island with a pina colada, although that might be nice sometimes. It might be very appealing. The goal is to set whoever's coming up next after us up so they can succeed. That's preparation. Because something's coming, someone is coming next. I think that's such a shortcoming of the American mindset, is we think about like 18 to 62 and a half. And then we're out. We're really the only culture that thinks that way. But here's what I think my assignment is here, is to build and prepare for whoever and whatever's next, so they don't have to do all that stuff. They can serve people the way they're wired to serve people. And when we prepare, here's the thing, it's not about us only, although we benefit. But when you think about preparing your heart and you think about who's next and you think about getting to Bethlehem, what you do is you forget that you're riding a donkey in 4-inch deep mud. And the pressure doesn't grab you because your heart's been prepared for the season that you're going through. And you know, just like God always has, he's going to get you through this time. And you get your mind off of the outside. You get your eyes on him, and the pressure lets go, and the peace takes hold. If you're looking for the outside circumstances to be your definition of peace, you've missed the story of the journey to Bethlehem. You've missed that part of the story. That this candle of peace, it's about his presence. Emmanuel, God with us. That's what we celebrate. That's what we look to. Please remember, church family, spiritual preparation is not a one-time event. It's a continuous, regular renewal type of journey. And it requires three things that a lot of humans aren't very good at naturally. commitment, patience, and perseverance. Write those three words and reflect on them all week. Commitment, patience, and perseverance. And let this preparation cause each of those to grow in your life. Keep believing. Keep hoping. Keep serving. My prayer is that you'll never give up on God, because I know this, God never gives up on you.